Good afternoon, comrades. I'd like to welcome you to Socialism 2009 and to this session, Building a Mass Shop Stewards Movement, the Role of the National Shop Stewards Network. My name's Eleanor Haven, and I'm a member of the Socialist Party in Croydon. I'm also a PCS branch secretary in the Land Registry, where we're currently facing threats of job cuts, office closures and privatisation. In this session today, our speakers are Linda Taff, on my left, Secretary of the National Shop Stewards Network, who will be speaking for approximately 10 to 15 minutes. And on my right, Rob Williams, Unite Convener at Linamar, will be speaking for, again, approximately 10 to 15 minutes. There will then be the opportunity for contributions or questions from the floor, and then Rob and Linda will respond to the contributions. I think this year we've seen a marked increase in industrial unrest. These include the disputes at the Lindsay oil refinery, the occupations at the Vistian car parts factories, and the Vestas wind turbine factory on the Isle of Wight. We've also seen the National Post Office dispute, which has followed on for a large number of local disputes in the CWU, and a whole host of other disputes, including the ongoing industrial action in Leeds with the bin men, and the recent meeting of British Airways cabin crew, many of whom have never considered industrial action before, but are determined to fight the cuts proposed by Willie Walsh. In my own union, PCS, we're facing the threat of stripping away accrued redundancy rights to make cutting jobs much cheaper, and proposed efficiency reviews threaten tens, if not hundreds of thousands of jobs across the public sector and the selling off of public assets. Whether in the public or the private sector, the message is clear. Workers throughout industry are facing cuts in pay, terms and conditions, and even redundancy. Whilst the good times have returned for the bankers, and even more billions are being pumped into bailed out banks to make them more attractive potential purchasers, ordinary workers are once again being made to pay. And it's only through solidarity of the working class and the trade union activists working together that we can effectively fight in the coming struggles. I'd now like to ask our first speaker, Linda Taff, to speak for approximately 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Well, thank you, Eleanor, and thank you, everybody, for coming to this particular session, because we're in stiff competition with all kinds of other really interesting and pressing subjects. But I think it's a testament to those who have come who recognise that the trade unions are actually one of the most important elements in the struggle today. I'm the secretary of the National Shop Stewards Network, but I also am a member of the National Union of Teachers, and I was for 10 years a member elected to the National Executive of the NUT. So I do have a background in trade unionism. Now, in looking at the role of the Shop Stewards Network and how things could possibly develop, I think I would like, in my contribution, really just to outline where the organisation has come from and what it's been doing over the past few years. Because in the course of the class struggle, all kinds of organisations are thrown up, you know, they wax and wane. There's any number of trade union groupings, all kinds of organisations, which can come to the fore depending on circumstances. And in the history of trade unions, it has been almost a common practice for workers in whatever industry, but particularly in the industrial sections, to try and make themselves stronger by banding together in networks, in combines, you know, all kinds of organised structures which will give strength to their argument against the bosses. For in situations where the bosses have the whip hand, which has been largely the history of the last couple of hundred years, workers have had to resort to any means to try and strengthen their position, because we all know as individuals it's very hard to fight against the big bosses. And we have a similar situation today. I don't know whether people saw in the Daily Mirror yesterday Paul Routledge's column. I forgot to bring the Daily Mirror. But there was a cartoon of a big boss, you know, shaking his fist at workers. And the company rules on the board, you know, long hours, low pay, do what your boss tells you. And the workers are holding little placards saying, we're on strike, we're not going to do it. That is the way the balance of forces is seen. And, you know, and so we have to find ways of getting together. And of course, we don't have access to the TV and all the media to kind of put our voice across, even if, you know, we have organisations that can do it. But there have been some marvellous examples in the past, particularly amongst industrial workers like car workers, where in the days when the car companies were chalking up massive profits and workers wanted a slice of those profits, a bigger share as possible, then car workers got together in shop stewards committees throughout particular companies, then throughout the industry, encompassing all trades. And then we've had organisations which bring together different industries, different trades, if you like, to defend the trade unions as a whole. So as well as single industry shop stewards committees, we've had things like the Liaison Committee for the Defence of Trade Unions, which was attempting to defend the trade unions from the beginnings of real restrictions. And we had the Broad Left Organising Committee, I think that was in the late 70s, when we were trying again to defend workers from attack. So, you know, there are organisations which are thrown up and they're tested in struggle, and if they stand up to the test, then they stay, otherwise die away. Because it's no good just saying the Shop Steward Network is the organisation which is going to do this, that and the other, and just hope everybody will, you know, will come to, you know, to our flag. And the fact is, the Shop Stewards Network didn't arise out of a natural process, if you like. It didn't arise organically out of workers looking to each other to make themselves stronger. It was actually brought into being out of a decision of a conference called by the RMT. Now, the RMT is, as we know, is one of the most militant unions, with a leadership which is very conscious of its responsibilities. And I do like their little strapline, which was on a pamphlet I picked up a couple of years ago. RMT, never on our knees, which I thought was quite good. But the Shop Stewards Network was brought into being by a decision of the RMT, basically. At the beginning, or, you know, 10 years or so ago, beginning of this, the 21st century, when, you know, New Labour was showing its colours, you know, to everybody, there was great kind of anxiety about what was happening at the electoral level. You know, Labour had moved into New Labour, and there seemed to be no voice for the working class. and it was summed up in the kind of phrase, the crisis of political representation. And the RMT conference decided that they should have a meeting about this, and did so. And at that particular meeting, ourselves as the Socialist Party participated, and we were arguing for the setting up and the formation of a new mass workers' party. And at that time, Bob Crowe and the others in the leadership of the RMT said, no, hang on a bit. If we're going to create something out of the trade unions, look at the trade unions. Look at what's, you know, happening or not happening at the base of the trade unions. Lack of participation. At that time, not many strikes, not much happening. And their contention was, we first of all got to rebuild the trade unions from the bottom up before we can start to talk about the formation of a mass political party arising out of that. And so, at the second conference of the RMT, they brought into being the Shop Stewards Network. They gave it the name. They gave it a little pot of money to see it on its way. And there was a vote of people who wanted to participate in this organisation. And so it was a completely artificial setting up of this network. But having set it up and having the participation of ordinary workers, shop stewards, branch secretaries, anyone who had a position in the trade union, we then began to set about trying to build something. And I think just a quick look over what has happened over the last few years, just pulling out some events that we've managed to organise to raise our profile. And that is, we had a launch conference which attracted 300 delegates and visitors, overwhelmingly shop stewards, workplace reps, people on the ground. Then we tried to get off and running regional bodies. Rob will probably come in and explain what they've been doing in the Wales area, where they've really taken a lead on a number of issues. We used, under the name of the Shop Stewards Network, we had a campaign to try and stop the Southampton Ford transit van site from being closed down, which was very useful. In GSK in Ware, in Hertfordshire, the same thing was done. We organised a Shop Stewards Network meeting to try and help the very low organisation and the lack of membership of trade unions in a factory that was about to be closed down. But the history of it has actually been a little bit different, a bit more complicated. But I just spoke to a comrade earlier who said they've now got Unite coming in to do a recruitment day at the factory. So the Shop Stewards Network has been a very small organisation, but it has actually been able to help turn the wheels of the, if you like, the official trade unions, or kind of move them into action, like we did in Southampton, where, you know, a few people managed to move Unite into more action. Again, when we saw the threatened cuts in the car industry, we called a meeting of car workers. We got people in the areas to try and leaflet the factories, and we called a meeting in Birmingham, which was successful. We've made links with workers in the Honda factory in Swindon, those links, we've kept those links, and one of them has even come on to the steering committee of the National Shop Stewards Network. And I think if anybody was around for our conference in 2009, this year, we managed really to bring together all the leading trade unionists on the ground in all of the major struggles that had taken place up to that point. You know, starting with the Vistian workers, where we were able to bring over the convener from Belfast, and we had the two other conveners in the meeting itself, where we had Keith Gibson from the Lindsay oil strike, oil refinery strike, where we had Rob from Linamar. We had Justice for Cleaners and the Cleaners on the Underground. We had all kinds of debates, and it was really, really, really quite an exciting conference. You know, going around and listening to some of the debates in the Lindsay workshop, there was big discussions about this foreign British jobs for British workers. A really exciting discussion, thrashing those issues out. So the Shop Stewards Network has a lot of potential. And just to finish off my contribution, I would like to highlight something that we've been doing in the London area, the London Shop Stewards Network. Again, it's a small committee, but it does have points of support in various areas. And a couple of weeks ago, we had a discussion about the post office, the Royal Mail strike, and decided that it would be a good idea to have a joint union meeting of the post office, the Royal Mail workers, and the underground workers who are about to go into dispute. They're balloting for a dispute on pay. With PCS, who were complaining about the use of their workers to try and advertise their scab jobs, if you like, and the threats to job seekers if they didn't take these scab jobs. And we suggested getting all those people together to see how we could assist the Royal Mail CWU members. And We were discussing it, and the RMT members who were there said, it's done. And they said, we'll organise it, we'll pay for the room, we'll get the publicity out. And so we've got, unfortunately, the strike's being called off, but we've had this meeting ready, a big hall in central London, at which the shop stewards would be the chair of that particular meeting, and we also, the logo is on with the CWU and the RMT and the Shop Stewards Network logo. And at that, we were going to launch a petition, which was basically saying if post workers were to call for action, support action, that we would agitate at every level to make that happen, and we will be prepared to do it. So it was the moving the official organisations, if you like, and also bringing people on the ground. So that meeting might still take place because there are other workers in London ready to go into battle. I'm not sure whether the airport workers are going or not. I think that they might have been held back. But the potential there is for some kind of, joint union London trade union committee. Now, I'm not saying that that's going to happen, but what I am saying is that even despite the beginnings of the Shop Stewards Network, with the contribution that Socialist Party members and Socialist Party ideas have been able to contribute to what is an alliance, a very loose alliance of all kinds of trade unionists from all kinds of points of view, but we've managed to get a group together which can, and you know, can act together should we get the opportunity. And I do think that we will, you know, given the situation we're going into, we are going to get more opportunities to do that. And I think there will be a role for the National Shop Stewards Network.
Thank you, Linda. That was very interesting background to the setting up of the Shop Stewards Network. I'm now going to call in Rob Williams, the Unite convener at Linamar. He's going to speak for about 10 to 15 minutes.
I always say, I'm only going to speak for 10 minutes and usually more, so I won't say nothing now, and let's see what happens. But I do think it's important that we have the maximum discussion, to be honest, because all the comrades have got their own experiences. I never would have thought they're very similar experiences. There'll be some notable exceptions depending on what union you're in. But the experience will be of being blocked by the full-time officials, of having a layer of full-time officials who will, you know, will have spent be spending most of their time saying, look, you can't do this, you can't do that, look, we can't fight. And I'll come into that now. And, you know, really, if the National Shop Stewards Network hadn't been formed, then there would be a need for a rank-and-file trade union organisation at the moment. And really, that is because of the role of that layer of leaders and full-time officials who have come through a period of concession bargaining, a partnership with the bosses. We're out of touch then, but are hopelessly out of touch now in a recession where the bosses really have taken all the disguise away and are, you know, brutally attacking the conditions of workers. And of course, you know, as all employers, the government itself is an employer. And the government, whichever party wins the election, by the way, then again, we'll carry on those attacks. And really, I think to have an idea what the Shop Stewards Network could become, you know, it's worth looking back, if you like, to the period where, if we're honest, the network aspires to be. You know, the period of the 60s and the 70s in particular, where the, you know, the Shop Stewards movement was a, you know, was a strong counterweight to the full-time officials and the official leaders of the trade union movement. And just to get an idea of that, because we have to put things into perspective, that was a period where the trade union movement had 12 to 13 million members. It has gone on for half that at the minute. You know, record industrial action and all the rest of it. And obviously, there are differences, and there are reasons why there are differences. The post-war period was the period of full employment, generally rising living standards, etc. But one of the consequences of having full employment in an economy where manufacturing was a big part of it, engineering, manufacturing, this type of thing, was, you know, you had a strengthening of the trade union movement. You think about it, the generation before was the generation that went through the depression of mass unemployment. This was a period where workers were drawn back into industry. And like I say, laid the basis for strengthening of the trade union movement, but also importantly, the development of the shop stewards movement, the development of the shop stewards committees. Now, the importance of the shop stewards committee, certainly the joint shop stewards committees, for instance, in the car industry, you would have had perhaps 18 to 19 different trade unions represented in the factories. And to give an example of that, I estimated last night that my union, Unite, whereas one union now, would have been at least seven unions in that period, you know, the engineer, the EU, the ETU, the plumbing union, you know, the ASTMS, MSF, all these different things, the vehicle building, TNG, etc. So the Shop Stewards Committee played the role of uniting all those on the in one body, and meant that the management found it much more difficult to divide the shop floor. Mind you, all sometimes succeeded in dividing the shop floor on the basis of different unions, trades, and all the rest of it. But the crucial importance was, when you look at that period, certainly before the 70s, that was a period of very few national official strikes. you know, in reality, you had far more localized action. And of course, the reason why that was is that the trade union had a right-wing leadership, generally speaking, and therefore the development of the shop stewards movement was a necessity to break out of that. You know, you had a right-wing leadership in reality who wouldn't call national action, and therefore the development of the shop stewards committee was an important avenue for workers at that time. Obviously, the end of the 1960s, or the end of the so-called post-war consensus, you know, at the onset of the end of the post-war boom, and with falling profitability, the employers were faced with the prospect of taking on the trade union movement with the help of Labour first, and then the Tories, and trying to attack trying to bring in anti-trade union legislation. And in reality, if we're honest, the trade union leaders have never worried too much about the anti-trade union legislation, because if we think about them, what does the anti-trade union legislation mean? It means that the rank and file members of the union are shackled. That's what it means. Whereas in the past, you could have a workplace where if they didn't like what they saw, they'd walk out. Now, you've got to go through the national unions in the main. I know there's exceptions to this, but the national unions, you've got to go through the balloting process and all the rest of it. In reality, you require the assistance of the full-time officials, whereas, of course, before the anti-trade union legislation, that didn't happen. Now, that period, the shop stewards movement had played a positive role in a number of aspects, obviously organising rank-and-file workers, even to the extent, by the way, that able to call action on certain occasions itself, certainly build action. There were 350,000 stewards, it's estimated at that time. In British Leyland, Bill Mullins reliably tells me this, that the combined conferences of shop stewards, they held them in the NEC in Birmingham. That's how big the movement was at that time. So now there's under 1,000, I think, working in British Leyland at that time. And that was mirrored in the public sector later on, the development of unions like NUPI, etc. But one of the aspects was that in over a period, that radicalising effect of that shop stewards movement turned unions, the first of all the AU and then TNG, leftwards, if we're honest, turned those unions to the left at that stage. Obviously, it didn't stay, certainly the AU didn't stay to the left as well. Now, the position is different now. You know, unions have declined, as I've said. Also, only 27% of the workforce are in trade unions, 11% of young workers are in unions, and we've seen a decline in the number of stewards. Only in workplaces with 10 or more workers, there are only 13% that have shop stewards. That's down from 17% in 1998. However, what's interesting is that for workplaces with over 100 workers, 74% of shop stewards. And I think that's interesting. I think that's a reflection, first of all, the decline of manufacturing. The number of people employed in manufacturing in Britain is half what it was 30 years ago, probably less than half what it was 30 years ago. Obviously, the mines, the steelworks have declined as well, and they were very heavily organised engineering as well. But where those places still remain, then they tend to be almost totally unionised in that way. Now, the problem is the shop stewards network developed, as Linda remarked, really in 2006, in a period when struggle was still at a very low level. And really it developed as an anticipation of what would develop. And this year, really, we've seen that upturn in tempo of action. But if we're honest, the network is still at the stage, really, of being a conveyor belt of information, trying to help organise, spread the word, if you like, about action that's taking place, rather than leading struggles at this stage. But that is the stage it's at the minute. And I think the role that it's playing, increasingly, is allowing a layer of rank-and-file workers and stewards to undercut the role of the full-time officials. I'll give a practical example of what we did down my way in the car industry. Even before the network was properly developed, we had the full-time officials were going around the car component plants in our area saying, look, agreed to this concession because they've agreed it on the road. And they've agreed it, and they've agreed it. And in the end, three of our plants, all in different companies, got together, and we made a deal. And every time a full-time official said that we'd done something in our own plant, we'd phone up the other shop stewards. And we found out half it wasn't true. And of course, their attitude, but by the way, they never went to one of the plants saying, don't agree to that because they haven't agreed to it down the road. That's not the role of full-time officials played. Now, really, what we've seen is there's no accident why that tempo of struggle has gone up. You know, we've had the recession, we've had really the bosses are brutally attacking workers at this stage, and we've had resistance to those attacks. But in reality, the full-time officials and the trade union leaders are hopelessly out of touch. In reality, they went through the past period of compromising with the bosses, and they see this as even worse. I mean, to be honest, their view in the recession was, as soon as the recession developed, was the game's up. They just see their role, to be honest, as facilitating cuts in terms of conditions. We had a meeting, by the way, because Linamar sacked me to tackle members' terms and conditions, and they're back again now, but obviously whatever happens, it's going to be a better deal than it would have been if they'd have got away with sacking me. But the full-time official, after a meeting we had last week, said, it was a really positive meeting because I think people realise there's got to be change. That's the full-time official. That's not the company. That's the full-time official. One of the practical consequences, by the way, and the shop stewards network, I think, has played a big role in this. The solidarity campaign that we had, thankfully we didn't really need it, we raised £12,000 in our Archer fund in 6 weeks. By the way, we've given our fair share of donations back there. But when you look at the disputes that have taken place this year, the ones that have been commented on, all of them have something in common, really. It's the rank and file that have made the running. So in Linamar, Lindsay, Vestas and Vistian, it's the rank and file that have made the running. And what it shows to me is, the full-time officials have a very, very shallow control within the trade unions, to be honest. You know, and some of the things that they organise even half the time don't come off because they have got very shallow roots within their own unions. And look at Vestas, by the way, the Vestas dispute. McCluskey was promised to come down. He didn't come down. And the RMT came in and swept all before them and organised those workers at that stage. Over the last year, we've seen how the shop stewards network can help organise workers. Linda mentioned the Ford workers down in Southampton, the car workers meeting we had, the postal meeting in London. And I think also the shop stewards network conference this was by far the best conference we've had. Not accidental, it's because it came on the back of struggle and also victories, which is important. Because victories are vital, you know, in showing workers that you can fight back, and definitely a new layer was attracted to it. And I think the conference will start to play a big role within the trade union movement as we go on into the future. Now, some of those disputes, ours, Vistian, Lindsay, definitely were benefited from having an older or more experienced layer of stewards at that time. Our plant used to be a Vistian plant. Possibly the most important dispute this year was the Vestas dispute, because this was largely an unorganised workplace, young workers, and what the role that the network is playing is speeding up experience, because these workers, most of them never been involved in a trade union, within a few weeks were leading an occupation. You know, and I think that is crucially important. It's also, I think, important as well, Youth Fight for Jobs, which, by the way, the demonstration really represents the launch of Youth Fight for Jobs, not the end of it. But I think that's an important campaign because we need to reach out to this new layer of workers that are out there, by the way. And again, a little comment of the harsh realities of work. We've got a couple of temporary workers with us who are finishing week Friday. But one of them was telling me in the office, this is a guy in his 50s, by the way, what a temporary worker's life is. And he gets a phone call to come into work for once or twice, 1 or 2 days a week. And he weighs up whether to go in if it's more than a dole. If it's more than a dole, he'll go to work. If it's not, he won't. And that is the experience of work as it stands. I also think the network can play a big role in assisting the building of the left in the unions. You know, the unison, which, you know, obviously is a big issue, which no doubt the comments will come in on. But also, we are having a political, I wouldn't say a battle within the network, but it's certainly an ongoing debate about the role of political representation. And we make no apologies in the Socialist Party of calling for a new mass workers' party, breaking the link with Labour. That is not the view of the network, by the way. But that is a debate that's ongoing in there as well. But also, really, rebuilding the broad left, I think, is important. Because if we're honest, in most of the unions, the broad left sort of people who've been around for a long time, you know, older group of left stewards and activists, if we're honest, really, the job is to go for the new, fresh workers that are out there and to bring them in to the unions, into the broad left as well. And by the way, the network can also play a role of attracting unorganised workers into the trade unions. In some places, the network's going to play the role of actually creating the union organisation where it doesn't exist, to be honest. Because in reality, I know it doesn't the factory is closed, but that's what happened to investors, you know, in practice. And we'll have to see, obviously, what happens with the Royal Mail, etc. Although I will say this, I think within Royal Mail, I mean, I don't think that's just a simple... I think we could find a radicalised layer of posties who think this is a sellout and could be attracted as well. Comrades, I'll just finish with this. You know, this year really has been, a watershed year, to be honest. And that's because the effects of the recession are starting to be felt. But also, you know, it's quite clear the bosses are declaring war on workers, their living standards and those of their families. We've seen bitter defensive struggles and that is likely to continue. But if there's an upturn in the economy, which you cannot rule out, you know, there's some sort of bottoming out perhaps at the moment, whether that's going to lead to a proper recovery. You might even get workers actually trying to get back what's been lost as well. You might even have some offensive struggles. But the network, I think, has already shown in a very, very limited beginning, that's all, but it's shown the role that it can play. You know, Woodley, I think, exposed himself this week with the illusions he's creating in Vauxhall. He was on the news one night saying that when they create that Vauxhall, GM are not going to pull out, are not going to sell up in Europe. The next day, General Motors announced 10,000 jobs are going to go. And by the way, not only that, I thought the best comment and the more realistic comment was of one of his members in Ellesmere Port. As he was going to his car, he said, well, you know what this means, another load of meetings, another load of terms and conditions they want to get rid of. So his members have got a realistic opinion of what's going on, but his stewards in a few workplaces this year have shown what the trade union movement is all about, and the network, I think, can only build and get better over the next couple of years.
Paul Astley, I was one of the Liverpool Safeguard Council along with Harry and Tony Blair, and I'm also a member of Unite and a building maker, and Harry's also a building maker. It's just to raise 2 points, and I'll try and squeeze it in 5 minutes. It's one which Lynn has raised, which is the question of debate, which is vitally important. And also the question which Rob raised, which is where within the broad left. And for me, both of them culminated in the Northwest Broad Left of Unite, which our organisation only had probably four comrades working, although we've got more comrades now, four comrades in this particular meeting. For 6 or 7 months, we've been trying to organise a debate on disaffiliation from the Labour Party. The reason I raise this is because Woodley takes great delight in turning around to people and saying the biggest broad left in the region is the Northwest. And he likes to say that because he thinks he controls it. Because the officers of that broad left are basically Labour Party members and ex-Communist Party members who run it in such a fashion that they try to diminish the level of debate. Because in that organisation, the Northwest Broad Left of Unite, it's more about them delivering a vote for Tony Woodley or whoever's in power at any particular time than trying to build a broad left on the question of what's relevant to people's needs in terms of work and whether people are working or they're unemployed. And for that reason, we've been raising the whole question of why are you is giving money to an organisation that's effectively dismissing Unite members all over the country in a variety of private and public sector. And for 6 months they have tried to stifle us from having that debate, constantly putting it off, constantly changing the debate. And by our persistence, we got it on the agenda. And even when we got it on the agenda in a special meeting call, they also tried to then restrict that debate by limiting the league off to 10 minutes and by limiting the discussion to 1 hour. And we took that issue up with them, even under those conditions. We accepted those conditions and we organised that debate. They had their prospective parliamentary candidates, who's a member of Unite, defending the link. And me and Harry and Dave Walsh and Andy Ford, who are members of our organisation, getting up and putting the question of disaffiliation. 10 minutes they gave us, the fella who spoke on behalf of the Labour Party couldn't even use the 10 minutes up. That's the reality, and he's a prospective parliamentary candidate. 10 minutes wasn't enough for us. Even just dealing with the issues that have took place in the last 3 months, never mind the last 12 years of a Labour government. And the point we made to them was this, is let us look at the record of a Labour government. 3 million unemployed, 1 million young people between the age of 18 and 24 out of work. The worst record in history on the question of building public homes. People don't know, but this is a basic reality of life, that a Labour government in 12 years has only built 2,073 council houses in 12 years. That's all it's actually built. Homes to rent, councils, that's all it built. This is the party under an Iron Bedlam, when he was the housing minister, at the end of the Second World War, that called for 2 million homes to be built. We have 2 million homes to be built during the course of a Labour government. You have the Labour Council in Liverpool that built 5,000 council homes in 4 years. That's the reality of what we're talking about, and that's the point that we were making at that particular meeting, and I haven't got time to go into all the details now. But we turned round and said to them, that record, if it was a Tory record, where you're bailing out the banks now to the tune of £200 billion, which is a result of, by the way, has meant that that money, instead of going into building homes, has gone into the pockets of the bankers. And the banks, has meant that me and Ali, I'm not working, Ali's just about hanging on by his fingernails. If you spent £200 billion on homes, we'd have enough work till the day we retire. We could create apprenticeships across the country and put our young people back to work, and we wouldn't be having a situation where 1 million young lads and women are unemployed at this particular time. Now that debate went on, and our four comrades intervened. Ali made a splendid contribution of saying, if you don't live up to your obligations abroad left and start campaigning, there are organisations out there that will take up the vacuum. The BNP, they'll go out on the street, they'll try and start fill the vacuum. You have an obligation to stand up and offer an alternative economic strategy to what's taking place in this country now. And if you don't, other people will step in. Dave Walsh made the historical connection with the Labour Party. Why it was formed? It was formed because of anti-trade union laws. That's what it was formed for at the end of the 19th century and the start of the 20th century. And 100 years on, we're now back in the same boat. And that's why we're calling for a new Workers' Party, to deal with the requirements and needs and aspirations of working people. Well, to cut a long story short, we intervened well. And the comrades in the meeting, who don't belong to any political organisation, as a result of what we had to say and what the Labour Party didn't have to say, started getting up and started saying, these people are right. These people are right. Why should we put up with 12 years of being kicked about? If we look at 30 years from 1979 with the Tories, we've given up over 100 years of negotiation and terms and conditions in the last 30 years, but it took 100 years to win. We agree with what these people are saying. What the CP and the Labour Party members resorted to in that meeting was absolutely deplorable. When we finished the debate, everyone expected a vote. And the chairman got up and said, I'm not taking a vote. I'm not going to have a vote on this particular question. The only vote I'll take is a vote of confidence in me. He was relying on people to support him. Well, me and Ali got up. And we jumped right down his throat and we said, if that's the way you conduct debates, It's an absolute disgrace. And therefore, we vote a vote of no confidence in you, if that's what it's going to take to get a vote. Because what we want here is a vote, a consultative vote, a vote on this debate. We're not prepared to turn around and say we'll tie it to it, although you tie us to it if we lose it. You turn around and say to us, well, you can't move resolutions in your branch. But we said, we won't tie you to it. Well, there was pandemonium. And I had Tony Woodhouse, who's the national chairman of United, always, don't do it! You'll split the left pole. Don't do it. For God's sake, sit down, withdraw the resolution. So, all right, we got up and we turned around and said, and I'll finish on this point here, Chairman. We said, and we're not here to split the left. We're not here about personalities. We're here for genuine discussion. But the only way you can get a consensus at the meeting is by having a consultative vote as a minimum mayor requirement. If you're not prepared to give it, you're a disgrace, and people will take on board what you've said. And we'll withdraw our resolution, because we're not here about splitting the left. But I said to him, what is the consensus then? You tell us. And he had to turn around and admit, and he had to say in a coward way, he went, well, I have to admit that if it was, if I'm talking about consensus, then the consensus is to disaffiliate. So the point I'm making is we can't be putting up with people not allowing debate. Linda is right. What we've got to do is work in those broad lefts and work in those branches. I turn round to Woodley and say to him, you're not going to stifle debate, you're not going to stop us. It's not even about us, it's about members wanting to discuss what's going on that are directly affecting their life. We have to challenge them when they try and use bureaucratic methods to stop us, and we have to build a broad left by encouraging that debate. And if we do it, we